Have you ever heard of the wonderful one-horse shay that was built in such a logical way it ran 100 years to a day, and then of a sudden it... But stay. I'll tell you what happened without delay. Scaring the parson into fits. Frightening people out of their wits. Have you ever heard of that?
You are listening to the voice of Thomas Mitchell reading The Deacon's Masterpiece by Oliver Wendell Holmes. A page from this week's edition of Anthology. This is Bob Wilson standing in for Fleetwood. Each week at this time, the National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the Poetry Center of the Young Men and Young Women's Hebrew Association in New York, brings you transcribed Anthology, a selection of readings from poets, past and present, and the music to accompany their poetry. This week, excerpts from Poets Gold, Volumes 3 and 4. Our guests, Helen Hayes, Thomas Mitchell, Raymond Massey, and Carl Sandburg. A majority of the poems selected by RCA Victor for their third album of Poets Gold are children's verses. Verses we have all, at one time or another, learned by heart. These are poems which are always new. No matter how long ago they may have been learned, they seem to come to life again each time they are heard. And poetry is meant to be heard. It is always more for the ear than for the eye. Listening, the words become more than words with particular meanings. They become melodies that awaken memories and stir the imagination. To hear poetry read for its meaning and for its melody in the voices of Helen Hayes, Raymond Massey, and Thomas Mitchell is to experience it again in the very best of ways, by heart. Mr. Mitchell sets the scene for our series of children's verses with a poem I'm sure you all remember and love.
Henry Wadsworth Longfellow's Day is Done. The day is done, and darkness falls from the wings of night, as a feather is wafted downward from an eagle in his flight. I see the lights of the village gleam through the rain and the mist, and a feeling of sadness comes o'er me that my soul cannot resist. A feeling of sadness and longing that is not akin to pain, and resembles sorrow only as the mist resembles the rain. Come read to me some poem, some simple and heartfelt lay, that shall soothe this restless feeling and banish the thoughts of day. Not from the grand old masters, not from the bard sublime, whose distant footsteps echo through the corridors of time. For like strains of martial music, their mighty thoughts suggest life's endless toil and endeavor, and tonight I long for rest. Read from some humbler poet whose songs gushed from his heart, as showers from the clouds of summer or tears from the eyelids start, who through long days of labor and nights devoid of ease still heard in his soul the music of wonderful melodies. Such songs have power to quiet the restless pulse of care and come like the benediction that follows after prayer. Then read from the treasured volume the poem of thy choice, and lend to the rhyme of the poet the beauty of thy voice. And the night shall be filled with music, and the cares that infest the day shall fold their tents like the Arabs and as silently steal away.
Read from the treasured volume the poem of thy choice, and lend to the rhyme of the poet the beauty of thy voice. I don't suppose Henry Wadsworth Longfellow could have written four lines more perfectly tailored to the talents of the three stars selected for the third Poets Gold LP. Helen Hayes chooses two poems from the beautiful world of childhood make-believe for her contribution this week from the new album. Although Miss Hayes has earned the enviable reputation of being the first lady of the American stage, one of her greatest pleasures is reading aloud, and especially reading her favorite poetry aloud for all of you to enjoy. As Miss Hayes herself says on the new recording,
here are some poems I like for and about children, beginning as one should, of course, with The Children's Hour by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Between the dark and the daylight, when the night is beginning to lower, comes a pause in the day's occupations that is known as the children's hour. I hear in the chamber above me the patter of little feet, the sound of a door that is opened and voices soft and sweet. From my study I see in the lamplight descending the broad hall stair, grave Alice and laughing Allegra and Edith with golden hair. A whisper and then a silence, yet I know by their merry eyes they are plotting and planning together to take me by surprise. A sudden rush from the stairway, a sudden raid from the hall. By three doors left unguarded, they enter my castle wall. They climb up into my turret, or the arms and back of my chair. If I try to escape, they surround me. They seem to be everywhere. They almost devour me with kisses, their arms about me entwine, till I think of the Bishop of Bingen and his mouse tower on the Rhine. Do you think, O blue-eyed banditti, because you have scaled the wall, such an old mustache as I am is not a match for you all? I have you fast in my fortress and will not let you depart, but put you down into the dungeon in the round tower of my heart. And there will I keep you forever, yes, forever and a day, till the wall shall crumble to ruin and molder in dust away. A Child's Laughter by Algernon Charles Swinburne. All the bells of heaven may ring, all the birds of heaven may sing, all the wells on earth may spring, all the winds on earth may bring all sweet sounds together, sweeter far than all things heard, hand of harper, tone of bird, sound of woods at sundawn stirred, welling water's winsome word, wind in warm, wan weather. One thing yet there is that none, hearing it ere its chime be done, knows not well the sweetest one heard of man beneath the sun, hoped in heaven hereafter, soft and strong and loud and light, very sound of very light, heard from morning's rosiest height when the soul of all delight fills a child's clear laughter. Golden bells of welcome rolled, never forth such note, nor told hours so blithe in tones so bold as the radiant mouth of gold here that rings forth heaven. If the golden crested wren were a nightingale, why then something seen and heard of men might be half as sweet as when laughs a child of seven.
Suppose now we turn back the pages of the years to an era when the horseless carriage was still a novelty, and a popular means of transportation was the wonderful one-horse shay. Nowadays, I'm afraid you'd have to take a trip far out in the country to see a one-horse shay, or, of course, there's always another valuable source of memorabilia, late-night TV movies. The history of the wonderful one-horse shay was originally known as The Deacon's Masterpiece, when it was written by Oliver Wendell Holmes. Thomas Mitchell recites the poem on the third album of Poets Gold.
Among the first of America's humorous poets is Oliver Wendell Holmes. And a good example of his style is the Dickens masterpiece, or, as it's more generally known, The Wonderful One-Horse Shay. Have you ever heard of The Wonderful One-Horse Shay? That was built in such a logical way it ran 100 years to a day, and then of a sudden it... But stay. I'll tell you what happened without delay. Scaring the parson into fits. Frightening people out of their wits. Have you ever heard of that, I say? 1755, Georgius Secundus was then alive. Snuffed the old drone from the German hive. That was the year when Lisbon town saw the earth open and gulp her down. It was on the terrible earthquake day that the deacon finished the one-horse shay. Now, in building of shays, I tell you what, there's always somewhere a weaker spot, above or below or within or without, and that's the reason, beyond a doubt, that a shay breaks down, but doesn't wear out. But the deacon swore, as deacons do, with high dewbomb, and I tell you, he'd build one shay to beat the town and the county and all the country round. It should be so built that it couldn't break down. Fire says the deacon, it's mighty plain that the weakest place must stand the strain. And the way to fix it, as I maintain, is only just to make that place as strong as the rest. So the deacon inquired of the village folk where he could find the strongest oak that couldn't be split nor bent nor broke. That was for spokes and floor and seals, the hubs of logs from the settler's elm. Last of its timber, they couldn't sell him. Boot, top, dasher, from tough old hide found in the pit when the tanner died. That was the way he'd put her through. There, said the deacon, now she'll do. Do? I tell you, I rather guess she was a wonder, nothing less. Colts grew horses. Beards turned gray, deacon and deaconess dropped away. Children and grandchildren, where were they? But there stood the stout old one-horse shay, as fresh as on Lisbon earthquake day. 1800, it came and found the deacon's masterpiece strong and sound. 1820 came, running as usual, much the same. 30 and 40 at last arrived. And then come 50 and 55. A little of all we value here wakes in the morn of its 100th year... without both feeling and looking queer. In fact, there's nothing that keeps its youth, as far as I know, but a tree in truth. This is a moral that runs at large. Take it. You're welcome. No extra charge. 1st of November, the earthquake day. There are traces of age in the one-horse shay. A general flavor of mild decay, but nothing local, as one may say. There couldn't be, for the deacon's art had made it so like in every part that there wasn't a chance for one to start. For the wheels were just as strong as the thills, and the floor was just as strong as the seals. And the panels just as strong as the floor, and the whipple tree neither less nor more. And the back crossbar as strong as the fore, and spring and axle and hub encore. And yet, as a whole, it's past a doubt. In another hour, it'll be worn out. 1st of November, 55. This morning, the parson takes a drive. Now, small boys, get out of the way. Here comes the wonderful one-horse shay, drawn by a rat-tailed, ewe-necked bay. Hut up, says the parson. Off went they. The parson was working his Sunday text. He'd got to fifthly and stopped perplexed at what the Moses was coming next. All at once the horse stood still, close by the meeting house on the hill. First a shiver, then a thrill, then something decidedly like a spill, and the parson was sitting upon a rock at 9:30 by the meeting house clock. Just the hour of the earthquake shock. What do you think the parson found when he got up and stared around? The poor old shay in a heap or mound as if it had been to the mill and ground. You see, of course, if you're not a dunce, how it went to pieces all at once. All at once and nothing first. Just as bubbles do when they burst. End of the wonderful one-horse shay. Logic is logic. That's all I say.
Many important historical events have been recorded in poetry. Events beginning with the landing of the Pilgrim Fathers at Plymouth Rock, down through the years to current times. Poems which, if we were able to string them together like beads on a necklace, would tell the story of America. Raymond Massey reads one of the most famous of all historical poems this week on Anthology. I need only tell you the date. 'Twas the 18th of April in 75. Mr. Massey, would you care to furnish further facts?
Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of Paul Revere on the 18th of April in 75. Hardly a man is now alive who remembers that famous day and year. He said to his friend, "If the British march by land or sea from the town tonight, hang a lantern aloft in the belfry arch of the North Church Tower as a signal light, one if by land and two if by sea, and I on the opposite shore will be ready to ride and spread the alarm through every Middlesex village and farm for the country folk to be up and to arm." Then he said, "Good night," and with muffled oar silently rowed to the Charlestown shore, just as the moon rose over the bay, where swinging wide at her moorings lay the Somerset, British man of war, a phantom ship with each mast and spar across the moon like a prison bar, and a huge black hulk that was magnified by its own reflection in the tide. Meanwhile, his friend, through alley and street, wanders and watches with eager ears, till in the silence around him he hears the muster of men at the barrack door, the sound of arms and the tramp of feet, and the measured tread of the grenadiers marching down to their boats on the shore. Then he climbed the tower of the old North Church by the wooden stairs with stealthy tread to the belfry chamber overhead and startled the pigeons from the perch on the somber rafters that around him made masses and moving shapes of shade. By the trembling ladder, steep and tall, to the highest window in the wall, where he paused to listen and look down a moment on the roofs of the town and the moonlight flowing over all. Beneath in the churchyard lay the dead in their night encampment on the hill, wrapped in silence so deep and still that he could hear, like a sentinel's tread, the watchful night wind as it went creeping along from tent to tent and seeming to whisper, "All is well." A moment only he feels the spell of the place and the hour and the secret dread of the lonely belfry and the dead, for suddenly all his thoughts are bent on a shadowy something far away where the river widens to meet the bay, a line of black that bends and floats on the rising tide like a bridge of boats. Meanwhile, impatient to mount and ride, booted and spurred with a heavy stride on the opposite shore, walked Paul Revere. Now he patted his horse's side. Now he gazed at the landscape far and near, then impetuous stamped the earth and turned and tightened his saddle girth. But mostly he watched with eager search the belfry tower of the old North Church as it rose above the graves on the hill, lonely and spectral and somber and still. And lo, as he looks on the belfry's height, a glimmer and then a gleam of light. He springs to the saddle, a bridle he turns, but lingers and gazes till full of his sight a second lamp in the belfry burns. A hurry of hooves in a village street, a shape in the moonlight, a bulk in the dark, and beneath them the pebbles in passing, a spark struck out by a steed flying fearless and fleet. That was all. And yet through the gloom and the light, the fate of a nation was riding that night, and the spark struck out by that steed in his flight kindled the land into flame with its heat. He's left the village and mounted the steep, and beneath him tranquil and broad and deep is the mystic meeting the ocean tides. And under the alders that skirt its edge, now soft in the sand, now loud on the ledge, is heard the tramp of his steed as he rides. It was 12 by the village clock when he crossed the bridge into Medford town. He heard the crowing of the cock and the barking of the farmer's dog, and felt the damp of the river fog that rises after the sun goes down. It was 1 by the village clock when he galloped into Lexington. He saw the gilded weathercock swim in the moonlight as he passed, and the meeting house windows, black and bare, gaze at him with a spectral glare, as if they already stood aghast at the bloody work they would look upon. It was 2 by the village clock when he came to the bridge in Concord town. He heard the bleating of the flock and the twitter of birds among the trees, and felt the breath of the morning breeze blowing over the meadow brown. And 1 was safe and asleep in his bed, who at the bridge would be first to fall, who that day would be lying dead, pierced by a British musket ball. You know the rest. In the books you have read how the British regulars fired and fled, how the farmers gave them ball for ball from behind each fence and farmyard wall, chasing the redcoats down the lane and crossing the fields to emerge again under the trees at the turn of the road, and only pausing to fire and load. So through the night rode Paul Revere, and so through the night went his cry of alarm to every Middlesex village and farm, a cry of defiance and not of fear. A voice in the darkness, a knock at the door, and a word that shall echo forevermore. For born on the night wind of the past, through all our history to the last, in the hour of darkness and peril and need, the people will waken and listen to hear the hurrying hoofbeats of that steed and the midnight message of Paul Revere. ¶¶
Poet's Gold, album number 4, is devoted wholly to Carl Sandburg, the poet, and Carl Sandburg, singer of folk songs. Since our main concern is with Mr. Sandburg as a poet, suppose I read the brief notes he wrote for the selections to be heard this week. Why should a man make a baby song of the four winds? In the lines, he tries to tell why. In the presence of the changing four winds, don't we all have our personal moods? The endless repeated rhythms of the sea haunted me, and I tried for the music of it in Seawash. When jazz became a craze, I found myself burlesquing it and mocking it, while keeping strange flickers of it, as in Jazz Fantasia. There are at least a million couples in the USA who have made a go of love and marriage, and a couple was written for them. And now here is Carl Sandburg.
Baby Song of the Four Winds. Let me be your baby, South Wind. Rock me, let me rock, rock me now. Rock me low, rock me warm. Let me be your baby. Comb my hair, West Wind. Comb me with a cowlick. Or let me go with a pompadour. Come on, West Wind. Make me your baby. North Wind, shake me where I'm foolish. Shake me loose and change my ways. Cool my ears with a blue sea wind. I'm your baby. Make me behave. And you, East Wind, what can I ask? A fog comfort. A fog to tuck me in. Fix me so and let me sleep. I'm your baby, and I always was. Sea wash. The sea wash never ends. The sea wash repeats, repeats. Only old songs, is that all the sea knows? Only the old strong songs, is that all? The sea wash repeats, repeats. Jazz Fantasia. Drum on your drums, batter on your banjo, sob on the long, cool, winding saxophones. Go to it, oh jazz men. Sling your knuckles on the bottoms of the happy tin pans, let your trombones ooze, and go hush-a-hush-a-hush with the slippery sandpaper. Moan like an autumn wind high in the lonesome treetops. Moan soft like you wanted somebody terrible. Cry like a racing car slipping away from a motorcycle cop. Bang, bang, you jazzmen, bang all together. Drums, traps, banjos, horns, tin cans. Make two people fight on the top of a stairway and scratch each other's eyes in a clinch tumbling on the stairs. Can the rough stuff. Now a Mississippi steamboat pushes up the night river with a hoo, hoo. And the green lanterns calling to the high, soft stars. A red moon rides on the humps of the low river hills. Go to it, oh jasmine. A couple. He was in Cincinnati, she in Burlington. He was in a gang of postal telegraph linemen. She was a pot wrestler in a boarding house. The crying is lonely, she wrote him. The same here, he answered. The winter went by and he came back and they married. And he went away again where rainstorms knocked down telegraph poles and wires dropped with frozen sleet. And again she wrote him, the crying is lonely. And again he answered. The same here. Their 5 children are in the public schools. He votes the Republican ticket and is a taxpayer. They are known among those who know them as honest American citizens living honest lives. Many things that bother other people never bother them. They have their 5 children, and they are a couple. A pair of birds that call to each other and satisfy. As sure as he goes away, she writes him, the crying is lonely. And he flashes back the old answer, the same here. A long time since he was a gang lineman at Cincinnati and she was a pot wrestler in a Burlington boarding house. They never get tired of each other. They are a couple.
Carl Sandburg, reading from Poets Gold, Volume 4, recorded by RCA Victor on a 45 extended play album. Texts of the poems read by Mr. Sandburg can be found in his book, Complete Poems, published by Harcourt Brace and Company. Next week on Anthology, Fleetwood returns to bring you a new entertainment and educational media in the realm of poetry known as phonotapes. You will hear excerpts from Dante's Inferno and the Spoon River Anthology and meet Eugene Brook, an enterprising young New Yorker who is the guiding light of the Phonotape Company. Anthology comes to you transcribed in cooperation with the Poetry Center of the YM and YWHA in New York. The program is an NBC radio production written and directed by Draper Lewis. Until next week and another edition of Anthology, this is Bob Wilson wishing you good luck and good reading.